This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station Joy 94.9.
The Victorian AIDS Council Gay Men's Health Centre presents Well, Well, Well on Joy, the show that's all about sex, health and well-being.
Joy.
Welcome to another week of Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9, where we talk about issues and topics related to sex, sexual health, and the well-being of our wonderfully wide sexually and gender diverse community. I'm your host, John, and I'm joined by today by my co-host and fellow American expat, Cal. Hello, Cal.
Hey, John. How are you going?
Yeah, you know, it's pretty good. How about you?
I'm very good. I've had a very, as many people probably have already said today on Well, Well, Well and all around Melbourne, I've had, you know, coming off of a very exciting Pride March yesterday.
Oh, fun. I missed it. How was it?
It was amazing. I don't know. I'm still debating. You know, you hear everyone going, it's the biggest one yet, or, you know, it's had the biggest turnout.
Yeah.
And it's always, you always kind of, I guess I'm very, I don't know, maybe it's my background in kind of communications and spinning, and I feel like we say that every year, but is it really? But I will say that just in the marshalling area alone, the space was so much more filled. It's, you know, in previous years, the space that we used down in St. Kilda at Fitzroy Street, it was just sort of the front end of this oval. And this time we were taking over the entire space. And when you looked out upon the crowd and the diversity of it as well, I think you just saw, it was wonderful. It was well and truly something to be proud of, because you saw, you know, you saw young people and you saw the parents of young people and you saw like senior voices in the process, and you saw people from the trans community and you saw people from the disability sector. And, you know, you do see corporates there and in amongst it as well. And I know that brings out mixed feelings in some folk. But I think it wasn't like they overshadowed the others. They were just part of the mix. And the reality is, look, there are queers in these corporate spaces as well.
Fully.
And some of these businesses, you know, need to recognize that and institute that into the, you know, health and well-being of their workforce as well. So I think, yes, overall, I was just great to see sort of the overall portfolio of it. But as we enter this final week of the Midsummer 2017 Festival, we'll be reflecting on some of the excellent events that we've seen these past couple weeks, as well as some of the events coming up this final week. And then after that, I think we'll be looking at something that's important to all of us, John, LGBTI community resilience, and joining us to talk about stigma, discrimination, and how we as individuals and as a community can remain resilient through it all is it Theodore Sipiris?
Sipiris.
Yeah. See, I knew you would correct me on that, John. I feel like you know him dearly. There you go.
Maybe a little bit there.
An activist and advocate, Theodore, and former project officer at Living Positive Victoria.
Yes, indeed.
And as always, we do encourage you all to take part in the conversation. You can contribute to tonight's episode of Well, Well, Well by sending us an email at onair@joy.org.au, or probably even easier for most is to send us an SMS at 0427-JOY-949, both of which we'll get right here in the studio and we'll incorporate you into the conversation. We'll be right back after a quick song, but you're listening to Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9.
Joy. Welcome back to Well, Well, Well with your hosts, the virtually indistinguishable pseudo-Americans, John and Cal. We were talking about it before we went to the break for the song, but Cal went to the Midsummer Pride March yesterday, which apparently was quite an event. Cal, what were some of the highlights from that? Other than, I mean, you mentioned there was a great deal of participation from a number of communities, but what else did you see there?
I think, well, I mean, I was really excited. I mean, personally, I'm always going to say something about the sporting community. My involvement is always there. I was there with Surge. And, you know, so I was marching along with Melbourne Surge. There's probably way too many pictures of me and my Speedos with a water gun yesterday. but I think what I really liked is maybe sounds really silly, people were taking it a bit more like seriously about like making nice signage and like making choreographed dances. And like, I think I think for a long time when I used to go to Pride March, I felt like people weren't even really trying because they're like, okay, we're never going to be Mardi Gras.
Yeah,
you know?
Fair enough.
And so it doesn't have that sort of production quality. But I think people were getting a bit more behind it this year, and they're just making a bit more of an effort.
Well, that's nice.
And I really appreciate that. And I think it really adds to the momentum and whatnot. And everybody puts forward effort in their own ways. Not everybody's, you know, able to be a cashed up sort of sponsor and being able to do high end production stuff. But, you know, even like I have to give a shout out to Front Runners. They, you know, just another sporting club, but they had choreography. They all had little mini Carmen Miranda hats. And that stuff, you know, it makes a difference, and it adds to sort of the pageantry. And yeah, and I have to say too as well, I'll give a shout out to my friend Anna, actually, who was marching with My Rainbow Story, who was putting effort into kind of her own outfit, which was talking about her personal journey and the words, the kind of pejorative words that people were using for her during various periods of time of her life that were all kind of pinned on her, with these sort of wings and kind of coming out of it. And, you know, it wasn't about being high production, but it was conceptually, it was really, you know, there was effort and thought put into it, which I thought was great.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah. I'm almost sorry that I missed it.
But. So everyone, good job for your efforts this year. Continue to raise your game. Love, Cal.
Yes, and one day we might be as good as Sydney.
Well, you know, look, and it's not a competition.
I know. Besides, Melbourne is just evidently better than Sydney.
Well, there you have it. Well, look, we won't dwell on that too much. I will mention, though, before we did say that we wanted you to jump in on the conversation, and a big thank you and a shout out to Lloyd, Bryke, and Neil, and Bernie listening from this from steamy Ipswich, Queensland tonight.
Oh, my.
So our interstate listeners, thank you for listening to Well, Well, Well. As we said, if you want to jump in on the conversation, on air at joy.org.au or SMS 0427-JOY94.
Ooh. So it sounds like Vec had a pretty full calendar this midsummer in addition to everything at Pride March, and we did a lot of stuff at Carnival doing like the gay community periodic survey, which by the way is online, so if you haven't filled it out, please go a little Google search and find it, fill it out for us. Let's see, we also did HIV testing, rapid testing at Carnival. We co-hosted the Queer Ass Trivia at Hares and Hyenas, which
John, you attended, yes?
It was fantastic,
What does the Queer Ass Trivia entail?
Queer Ass, I sound ridiculous either way. It was sexual health, it was queer history, it was queer identity, it was naughty and disgusting and fun. There was a coloring contest where... there's a fairly well-known coloring book, apparently, that was, you know, it resembles Georgia O'Keeffe paintings, and there was a coloring contest for that just to see how creative you could be, and I'm happy to say that my team won with its fabulous submission, Piss Take on a Postcard, Sunny Cape Canaveral. Welcome to Sunny Cape Canaveral, with somehow a rocket ship blasting off. I'll leave that to your imagination.
Okay.
But it was great fun. The boys at Hares and Hyenas are just, they're a blast. They were doing asking questions about like hanky codes and what they meant, and some obscure ones, what some of the flags for different communities meant, like no idea, history, just like current stuff. I was actually kind of blown away with how difficult it was, but it was great, so I hope they do it again next year and actually have more people involved, because it was quite an intimate crowd. It was great fun.
Sounds like it incorporated sexual health quite well. And
I managed to misspell syphilis in the spelling round, which infuriated me, because I spell syphilis at least 15 times every day, and I said double L instead of just L, and that was just...
They're tricky, the STIs.
I was so upset.
There you go. One of the other events that incorporates a bit of sexual health as well as social issues facing the LGBTI community is the Hypothetical at the Deacon Edge Auditorium at Fed Square.
Yes.
It was a huge event again. It was another sellout event with about 350 people in the audience watching a pretty stellar lineup of panelists this year. And I believe it's online if you do want to check it out. If you missed out on it, you can check out if you go to vac.org.au or you look up for vac.org.au on YouTube, you can check out the Hypothetical. Has been was filmed by Channel 31.
Yes.
And was live streamed as well. So look for it on there. You can see a lineup of panelists including Benjamin Law, Judith Lucy, Dr. Edwina Wright, and hosted by the lovely Adam Richard, no stranger to Joy 94.9. And you can find out, as the Hypothetical this year was called, who killed Sharon Swallows.
I think everybody wanted to have a go at her.
There you go.
No, it was a great show, so we were happy for that. But Midsummer is not over yet, much to my mistake earlier this morning. I made a fool of myself. There's still a lot of events left to go. One in particular that I reckon you should check out is called Belonging For It. It's a multimedia art exhibition exploring meth use among gay, bi, and queer men. I know it sounds really down and dour, but it's actually an incredibly well-done thing. There's videos, there's drawings, there's paintings, there's cartoons. It sounds strange, but it's really fantastic. It's being presented in part by VAC, but it's at the Pronto and Equinox Clinic at 175 Rose Street, Fitzroy. Pardon me, and that runs through the rest of the week. Also this week, our good friends at Hares and Hyenas are running their wonderful Ball of Wax show, which is, it's just insane, but you should give it a shot if you have the chance. That's this Saturday at 8 p.m. at Hares and Hyenas. If you want more information, you can go to wordisout.com.au/events. There's also a little thing called the Pride Cup, but I hesitate to mention it considering our dear cat is not participating this year.
Okay, so we've got the grudge match coming up on the weekend. The Water Polo Club will be, the Melbourne Surge Water Polo Club will be clashing with the Sydney Stingers as well as the Brisbane Tritons in a celebration of sport and diversity in the Tri-State Cup as it continues on. Or grudge match, rather, we're calling it this time around. Up next, we will come back with Theodore, formerly of Living Positive Victoria, advocate, activist, and all-around good guy.
Joy 94.9.
You are listening to Well, Well, Well here on Joy 94.9. I'm Cal, and I'm joined by my co-host, John, and we are now joined by Theodore. I'm never going to say the surname right.
Cypress.
There you go.
T's silent. Just ignore it.
My half-Greek mother would not be proud of me. I apologize. Yeah, look, they changed our surname, you know, when my family moved over, so we got like a more anglicized version, so I never got used to it all. So.
Okay, that's fair enough. We can forgive. Well, we have Theo here for a particular reason. Mainly, he's being a very good sport because some of our original guests were unable to make it today, and him just being pretty much a wizard and wonderful person agreed to step in at the last moment and talk about something that's actually quite important to the community, and I hope we do it justice tonight. But we talk often at VAC and on Well, Well, Well about mental health and some of the difficulties that our community, the LGBTI community, faces in maintaining good mental health. By most accounts, when we talk to people who work in that space, our community is struggling right now for many different but understandable reasons. Places like Switchboard and QLife, their two counseling resources, have both reported significant increases in the numbers of callers seeking counseling services. Also, VaxZone Counseling Service is seeing really record numbers of people looking for psychology, therapy, all of that. And we're really struggling to meet demand with those services.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And we've heard this before when we've had guests on talking about mental health. And with so many people facing difficulties that need professional attention and support for us as a community to understand how we can support each other and how we can develop individual strategies for coping when times get tough. Theodore is joining us in the studio this evening, who's someone who's been on both sides of the issue as the former project officer for the Senior Voices Project at the Living Positive Victoria. Before joining Living Positive Victoria, Theo became well known for talking about his personal experiences with homophobia, stigma, HIV, and addiction. He'll be sharing some insight from both his professional and personal experience. Theo, thanks for joining us.
No worries. Thanks so much.
You're pretty much amazing, so thank you for doing this.
I feel like we should disclose the personal relationship at this point. Because you're being very familiar tonight.
A little bit of a caveat. Theodore is my husband. We got married in the U.S. last year. Not so much shotgun as, I don't know, altitude sickness. What do you want to call it?
Totally, yeah.
And we will celebrate that one aspect of America right now because we've got to hold on to what we can.
Yes. And we can get to that later. Yep. That actually is relevant to the topic at hand, which is surprising. But Theo, for the people listening, can you describe what the Senior Voices Project is, what it does?
Right. I'll give you two answers there. So first would probably be the textbook answer where we can actually, you know, it's really more about addressing the challenging issues of HIV and aging. The project really educated aged care providers and their staff on the needs of senior people living with HIV while building and strengthening the resilience of senior people living with HIV. The unofficial answer would also be it's like a kind of, you know, a club of people over the age of 50 talking about the rights that they demand in the years that are coming that they're possibly going to be seeking, you know, aged care. So, you know, rather than just have someone like me, you know, someone in their mid-20s being like, oh, you know, you really should do this and this and that, you're actually engaging with someone who is going to be looking at options in the next 15 to 20 years in a sector that is not trained for it.
Yeah, yeah. So essentially what you're saying is like some of these speakers, they're looking at what these issues are going to be that they're facing in the future and that all of us as we age will be facing.
Exactly.
What are some examples of some of these issues that they're concerned about?
Probably the biggest one would be stigma. Things such as, you know, people having to, you know, change bits and pieces of their homes. So even if they had like an aged care worker that was visiting them on a weekly basis, they would have to remove photos of, say, their life partners or partners that they've had in the past or porno magazines. You know, all of these things would have to be hidden away because they feared that they weren't going to get any, be discriminated against by their aged care worker. Other than that, like it's also, you know, helping build up, like upskill these aged care workers that are maybe a certificate 3 or 4 that don't really get the training of, like, you know, what's an undetectable viral load. And you know, a lot of these aged care workers, you know, are English as a second language, and you know, their cultural beliefs actually teach them otherwise about what, how they can catch HIV, you know, such as shaking their hand.
Oh, God.
And you still get that.
So I'm just curious with that first instance, that first anecdote that you were using. And I'm wondering, because we've talked about stigma on the show before and how it's, there are actually various different types of stigma.
Yeah.
And so I guess from those, is there a particular type of stigma with regard to, is it a perceived stigma that they're putting stuff away or hiding stuff away because they feel like this person coming to my house is not going to accept me? Yeah. Or are they experiencing sort of like something that gives them an indication of maybe either any homophobia or maybe like a less than tolerant persona from the worker?
Well, it's a mixture of the two.
It's case
both
by case,
in your internalized and externalized homophobia that they've either received or seen others receive.
Yep.
You know, probably a good way of putting it is most of the people before the 80s were criminalized for the people who they were, and these people are still living that. So, you know, it's kind of still being in that case of fear, as well as, you know, seeing maybe in the media with, say, the safe schools, you know, rollout and demise, and seeing that, oh, you know, they perceive it as, oh, crap, you know, society hasn't really changed that much at all. I'm actually going to piece myself in a cupboard there and put myself back in the closet because I'm afraid of, you know, being discriminated against by not only the community, but by the people who are taking care of me as well.
So maybe, so what you were saying before about, I guess, capacity building really in frontline workers is maybe about even just, I don't even know if it's sensitivity training, but just about really fostering a safe environment that people feel free to come out again, if you will.
I kind of coined it like dignity and respect training rather than HIV training because a lot of people tend to associate a lot with those three letters. And you know, you can actually get a lot from this project, you know, in a universal matter in how to treat people with dignity and respect rather than just people with HIV.
Yeah, it's, well, it's interesting because it's good that you put it that way because these aren't issues that are unique to people with HIV or older LGBTI people. There's something that we all feel on a day-to-day basis, I think, to varying degrees, but we still all feel them.
Exactly.
We need to take a short break. If you have any questions or comments, please email them to onair@joy.org.au or send an SMS to 0427-JOY949.
Joy 94.9.
Welcome back to Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9. We're talking with Theo Cyprus, an advocate for the LGBTI community, former project officer from Living Positive Victoria. We were just talking about, before we went to break, stigma and what that looks and feels like, and kind of how it manifests itself and how it affects us. Over the past few months, due to various events, we've seen an increase in the, I suppose, the vitriol aimed at the LGBTI community. Say things that previously weren't okay to say are being excused and even encouraged by, shall we say, certain sectors of society. I'm curious, though, about what happens when people who carry internalized stigma with them are suddenly exposed to this sort of talk. Like, how do they react to it? Theo, given your experience, what's your take on it?
Well, I'd hate to say it, but given we're part of a community that's already been marginalized and continues to be marginalized, there seems to be more of an uptake in our community, you know, using certain, well, any kind of substances as coping mechanisms to deal with this stress. You know, I know that I did. But and you know, often you'll find that most of these people who are turning to substances to deal with it, you know, are actually putting themselves deeper into a hole.
Yeah,
and well, trying to dig themselves out.
I suppose it's not necessarily just substances either. Yeah, it could be any manner of behaviors or practices that are not necessarily harmful or risky, but there's just something designed to, for lack of a better term, fill a hole, fill a gap.
Yep.
What's your take?
So, here? I guess I'm wondering here, just you know, when we're talking about this, when we're talking about substance use and we're talking about senior voices, I guess in the concept, we don't necessarily think of, you know, when we think of, are we talking drugs? Are we talking alcohol? What are we talking about?
Well, all of the above.
Yeah. And I think, I don't know, for me, I imagine it'd be the case for a lot of people listening tonight, when you even think about senior voices per se, I don't think you think substance abuse.
No, not at all. But the thing is, you know, all of these people who are senior members of our community, they've not only been, you know, firsthand accounts of what they've gone through, but what they've seen their friends go through during the AIDS epidemic when they were dying, and what was happening while this was, you know, how they felt. A lot of these people are going through a form of post-traumatic stress. And, you know, they usually turned to the thing that's available to them easiest.
Yep.
And given our community, we have access to all of these things, these wonderful things and these very dangerous things that can either, you know, save you or, you know, for me, you know, ultimately almost kill you, you know.
Yes. I guess I wonder too, I guess, would it be fair to say that an additional predicament when addressing the needs of this community is, you know, a lot of times when we look at stuff that we've done as an LGBTI community, a lot of it has been a peer-driven support. Yep. Yep. I guess one of the challenges to be, without being incredibly macabre, but the fact of the matter is that with an aging population, people do start to die. Does that mean that, like, really, your pool for peer-moderated responses is actually depleting at the same rate?
That's exactly right. I mean, like, I can't begin to say how much I've actually learned from these wonderful people that I've actually engaged with in the Senior Voices Project, in just, you know, peer mentoring, just to sit down and, you know, shut up and just listen to this, you know, man bare his soul in front of these strangers, and the things that I can actually pick up on, and, you know, even possibly, like, you know, stop it from happening to me, you know, some things that I don't necessarily find that, you know, I should do in the future, and actually learning those lessons from them. And I think there's a lot that our community can actually get from sitting down and listening to our elders. And, you know, that probably goes on to social media, where, like, we need to, like, help our you know, senior members of our community actually have a better voice in social media, only because, you know, it almost feels as if you're screaming to a vacuum when you're sharing your thoughts on social media, but everyone is listening, and it does affect them. So, you know, it's probably something that could maybe dispel the viciousness on social media at the moment. But that's me stabbing at a rather large issue.
Okay, this brings, because I get very excited about this stuff. As anybody who's listened to the show before, when it comes to, like, digital interventions and whatnot, I get a little bit jazzed up about this. But I think I will probably ask you about that a little bit later on. But I want to continue the conversation here on Well, Well, Well. If you are interested in jumping in on it, as we've said before, email onair@joy.org.au or send us an SMS to 0427-JOY. 949.
Joy 94.9.
You are listening to Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9. As he said, your voice, your radio station. I'm Cal, joined by my co-host John, and we're talking to the delightful Theo from former project officer at Living Positive Victoria about the Senior Voices Project and about listening to our LGBTI elders and what we can do to improve the, I guess, their health and well-being, as well as the broader health and well-being, by having a, you know, optimizing their voices and their experiences, I guess, in the bigger realm. Now, we were talking about digital, we were talking about social media. And I guess one of the first things that comes to mind is, well, two things, actually. First, you were talking about how you got so much out of them expressing, from hearing from their stories and from their learnings, from their experiences, under some pretty crazy circumstances, when you look at, like, the epidemic or previous experiences with use. While you said that the community would get a lot from hearing those voices, do you has anyone actually talked about whether or not, like, has the senior voices themselves or the elders, have they said whether or not they find it cathartic to be able to share that story? Or,
well, I think they're still searching. I mean, it's a person-to-person basis, of course. However, there are a lot of speakers where they just want to get their story out there. And, you know, they're limited to just sharing it to as many people as possible. Now, with social media, I think that there's a lot that can be done to possibly share that in a much larger scale. And, you know, there are projects out there like Staying Negative, that FAC actually does, that shares these stories. Even, you know, something like the art project at the Equinox Pronto, that's sharing stories as well. So we've got the mediums out there. It's just a matter of, you know, probably engaging more to these communities, such as, you know, trans people, or even, you know, people over the age of 55, and not forgetting about those voices.
This brings to my second question, because while there are some projects that are going out there and they're collecting those voices, do you think there's a place to potentially build the digital literacy of the senior, some of the senior voices as well? Do you think there's that interest? Because
there's a, I mean, like, even I've been having recently, like, my run-ins with the MyGov website. Now, if you're telling this, you know, 60 plus year old person to log into MyGov to actually organize some kind of community care for them. I mean, like, my grandma barely knows that the internet exists, let alone that she has to log into her MyGov to access her Centrelink, you know, support. So I think there's a lot that our government should actually do in building up the literacy, you know,
digital literacy.
Of our senior communities.
I just find it interesting because we talk about, in the context of resilience anyway, we talk about building these digital communities, online communities. As young people, the three of us, we're all relatively young. It's familiar to us, and that is where we can go for friendship and connection and all that. But for, I guess, a sector of the population that is, like you said, unfamiliar with this technology and are used to a different sort of interaction, a different sort of community, support, how much can we really expect from them in that realm? And should we really be diverting resources for seniors into digital spaces, or should we be trying to kind of build up what is there and make sure there's something left for them as their life goes on?
See, I've had this debate myself, actually, about whether or not, and I think it's a little bit of a balancing act. I think it's not a matter of doing all or nothing, because the fact of the matter is that the world is changing. If you only cater for, if you don't build that capacity, like Theo was saying, I think that they're still going to have this overwhelming feeling of being left behind. And I don't know if anybody else, you know, listening would be able to kind of have their own story, so to speak. But, like, even for my grandmother, when we were kind of getting her an iPad, the ability to Skype with grandchildren like myself, who lives on the other side of the world, to have that visual face-to-face, I mean, it's a very basic technology to learn. But once she got it, it opened up a realm of connection that does offer face-to-face. I mean, with video and the ability to stream now, I think that there are digital solutions out there that still offer, they offer a good digital solution. And there are people that will eventually, in aged care, get to a point that they're homebound. And that I think there's an opportunity for digital be in there. So I think it's a balancing act. And Theo, I don't know what you think about that.
Well, I mean, it's pretty stupid to say, but if you could get my mum to stop sending me emojis, that'd be great.
So I think once they learn these patterns, a lot of people who would fall into the classification of senior voices or LGBTI elders, I think they can pick it up. And I think it's not a matter of just working around it, but maybe helping them along the way still participate, because I think it does sound like
I don't think you need you don't need to dance around the issue with them. They're actually willing to learn, and I don't think they don't feel like they're being left behind. So they're more than, like, you can teach an old dog new tricks, and I've learned that on repeat in the last year.
Joy 94.9.
Can you imagine having to learn to walk or talk again at your age? Recovering after a stroke is a long journey. It's often very confusing and quite lonely. But there's lots of people who've been there before and are wanting to help. EnableMe is Australia's online stroke community. It's full of resources and videos, tools to guide recovery or share personal stories. You can even ask a question of a stroke health professional. It's for stroke survivors, their family and friends. And it's free from the Stroke Foundation. Visit enableme.org.au. A community message supported by Joy.
Welcome back to Well, Well, Well. We are continuing our chat about developing resilience, the Senior Voices Project, digital interventions, all manner of things. But really, it's about how to maintain a sense of well-being in an ever-changing and very difficult world. So Theo, when we talk about resilience and building resilience, what do we mean by that? What is resilience?
I think it's kind of building a tool belt in order to, you know, fend yourself from the, you know, attacks other people do, either verbal or non-verbal or, you know, physical, and trying to deal with that, I think, is probably the best way to put it in my words.
So what sort of, like, when I think of a toolbox of these series of things, of like, all right, if I've been faced with extreme difficulty or trauma, what are the things that I turn to de-stress, to debrief, to vent, to calm myself down? Is that what you're referring to?
Yeah, probably. Like, I mean, you know, it's a mixture of knowing what services are available to actually get professional help. You know, having a good relationship with your community, having a good relationship with your GP. You know, these are all things that would actually, you know, tools for success in making sure that you actually get out alive in, you know, 5-10 years down the track.
Yeah, that's, well, it's interesting because I was looking at an article in preparation for this, and it's talking about the difference between people who are resilient versus those who struggle through these sorts of times. And the universal thing among people who, say, had resilience was connection, social connection, whether it be family, friends, community, involvement in something beyond themselves that kind of took them away from the problems. So I guess I'm both of you. What sort of things can we think of? You don't have to give personal examples, but what have you seen as successes that, you know, if somebody's listening who says, all right, I've struggled with this, I'm scared something might happen, what can I do if I'm faced with a difficult situation that allows me to step away from it and recover from it?
I think I've got one thing that's, you know, quite controversial, but I would say, you know, probably stay away from what I would call the innovation of loneliness, you know, otherwise known as social media. You know, venting on social media for me has been the worst thing that I could possibly do. However, it was quite beautiful when it did happen, where I did make this, you know, epiphany. Mind you, you know, I was an intravenous drug user for 5 years and I've been clean now for many years now. I've kind of lost count.
Good for you.
Thank you. And, you know, during the time that I was actually struggling, I was using social media to just kind of get some, like some ideas out of it, just help, like to understand exactly why I was doing, who I was starting to become. And through that brutal honesty, I actually developed, you know, great connections with my close friends and slowly am moving out of actually using social media as a, you know, starting point to meet with people, and actually just regularly calling my close friends and looking to them for help. Because often I'd find that the wrong people were actually focusing on my development and, you know, they're not professionals, and they're probably not giving the best advice. Well,
that key word that you mentioned, I think, is meaningful connection. And while I think you're absolutely right, I think that there are technologies out there that can facilitate that. I think that with a lot of main social networking sites, like specifically Facebook and whatnot, it uses a language that gives people this false... It uses a language that gives people a false sense of expectation with, you know, your friends online and their likes and their hearts and their, you know, it's not fulfilling because it needs to be an exchange. It needs to be a dialogue. I mean, sure, there are times, I mean, I can even say, I've talked about mental health a few times, been working really closely on mental health in last year, and I have had a few friends who've been very open about their mental health conditions and issues over the last year. And while everyone sort of does the likes or the teardrop faces now that you can do more than just give a thumbs up to sad posts, but actually using going, okay, you know what? This is a messenger. You need a private message from me to say, hey, how are things going? What's going on? Like talking about resources that are out there, talking about sharing your own personal story. And to have, like you said, meaningful connection. And I think we're not conscious of it because we sort of think, oh, here's the framework for me to say, I'm okay with that, or I feel you because I'm going to give the sad face with a single tear.
Exactly. And that's not to say that, you know, don't go on social media and don't post anything out there. Vulnerability is a really important thing in our community. And I think we really need to do our effort every day to actually break down a bit of that wall that is disconnecting from other people. We really need to just understand that there's another person on another, you know, on another screen that's having an argument with you on, you know, whether the dress was blue or yellow or black and white. So I think it's really important that people actually understand that these are other people, even though you just see a name on there and they're just venting at you or they're being contrarian, you know, try and build that bridge.
Now, we've actually had a post come through, or sorry, an email come through, which, you know, is someone using the digital space here. But we've got, dear youngsters, many of your listeners who are in their 50s and 60s helped to develop the digital strategies through programming that you youngsters take for granted today. Coding from the more mainstream technologies of yesteryears through to technologies that are akin of that today. We could even program video players. Video players were more difficult to program than the coding of those of the multifaceted platforms that housed digital interfaces. Whoever is responsible for the debacle that is the Centrelink interface and the further responsible the data cleansing and data matching technologies are idiots. Trying to use it now from the perspective of a user, it should be thrown out. It is stupid, always failing, difficult and confusing to use. Love the 2x old POOVs. And that's from Peter. So Peter, thank you very much.
Oh my God, I love him.
joining in on that. And I think Peter has a really great point. And this was one of those things that I saw when I was working in communications and my background originally in photography, and we were starting to see digital come into play, is that you had to learn the analog, you had to learn the original. And I think that's one of those things that really, Peter's point really reinforces what you said earlier, Theo, which is that these are people who understand systems, and some of them played a really active role in the development of these technologies. It's just a matter of maybe bridging that gap. These people can learn these systems. It's, you know, I think it's just about, I think maybe what we're coming down to is maybe the disconnect really is in the cultural sense of it, because you've got a generation that doesn't have that point of perspective before this stuff came along.
To quote Mr. Miyagi, your glass is already full. You know, you have to empty it so then you can learn a little bit more.
So it's interesting because I think you do get kind of that mix where there are people saying, actually, we've got this, like we can be a part of this as well. So I guess any additional words on resilience that you think in this space that we need to keep in mind?
Probably, you know, get out there, get to your community orgs and actually, you know, really bring some awareness to these services that really need more funding. You know, sort of the VAC counseling service, they're like, it's almost impossible to get a booking these days, but they're still managing. They're still actually getting out there. So connecting with these community services actually allows them to get more funding. So, you know, get out there, share your experiences as well as, you know, trying to lobby your local government to actually try and do more for our community.
Yeah, absolutely.
Any other resources out there that we should probably give mention to for anybody that's looking to build that resilience but maybe wants to have a bit more guidance, a bit more help aside from counseling services? I don't know, any others out there, John, that you would recommend
Well? There's quite a few. I think some of the best and maybe most underrated ones are Switchboard and QLife. Switchboard is a 1-800 number and QLife is a website with live chat certain hours of the day. But I think knowing that there is kind of instant and immediate help when you're feeling those moments of like maybe despair and depression or panic and anxiety and just need to know that there's something out there, somebody out there. They're great resources. Switchboard's number is 1-800-184-527 and QLife is quite simply qlife.org.au. Also something that I think we tend to forget that we have this really incredible resource, and it's easy for some, it's difficult for others, but is the fact that we have Medicare and that actually encompasses mental health, and that we can ideally go to our GP, get a mental health plan, and go see a counselor up to 10 times a year, which is, coming from the US to me, is absolutely remarkable.
Yeah.
So if you have a GP who is able and willing to do that, by all means take advantage of it. To be a bit personal, I do that, and it has worked wonders for me.
I think, and you know, some job sites as well offer employee assistance programs, and I think a lot of people, I think there is, and I've talked about this before on the show, when we've talked with Beyond Blue and some of the work that's been happening in that space, there's still a stigma attached to mental health. So oftentimes these resources are there. People are just not really sure how to even begin that conversation. Yeah. So like you said, 10 sessions are available as standard part of Medicare, and you know, look in to see if you have an employee assistance program as well.
I think you've actually touched on something really important that we would be remiss not to mention, and that's something that probably all of us as LGBTI people experience, and that's that sense of, I guess, just immense shame. Even if it's low level, even if we don't recognize it as that, it actually has an effect on us, and it prevents us from doing things that are actually helpful to us. And that is saying, well, I could go to a counselor, I could call this line, I could join a social group, I could reach out to that friend, but I'm too this, I'm too that, I'm not enough this, I'm not enough that. I am flawed in some way that prevents me from actually engaging with my community. And you ended up defeating and hurting yourself like that. I think we all just need to kind of take a breath, give ourselves the space and the patience to say, all right, none of us are perfect, and none of us are ever going to be perfect. If we were, we would be boring. We'd probably be Mormons. So let's just calm down and accept that everybody is just as flawed as we are, and that there's nothing wrong with that. And
there's nothing wrong with reaching out for additional support and relying on each other and, you know, looking after each other.
Absolutely. Being kind like to Theo said, vulnerability is a very important thing. So.
Now, Theo, we do have to thank you. That is our show for another week. Any final words of advice with regard to resilience or, you know, building capacity for some of our senior voices or amplifying the senior voices within our community?
Well, like, look, word of mouth is actually a really powerful thing. Get out there, actually become a member of these community orgs like Living Positive Victoria. You don't have to have HIV to be a member, as well as being a member of, you know, the Victorian AIDS Council. It's really important that you engage with your community, because this actually means exactly what funding these organizations get, and funding means projects. Projects means, you know, change. You know, the more projects we have out there, the more change that we can actually do. So, you know, the ball's in your court. Get out there and do something with it. Yeah. So.
And, you know, two others that we might as well plug since we've mentioned them. Of course, Midsummer Festival obviously has membership and volunteers as well that anyone can get involved in. And joy.org, Joy 94.9. People can become a member of Joy as well. And that does get you out into the community and some of the bigger ones here in Melbourne.
Well, as we've been talking about resilience this evening, there's actually a really great place for some of us, if we've experienced a particular issue anyway, to build our resilience, to make connections with people who are going through similar circumstances. VAC has partnered with SHARC, that is the Self-Help Addiction Resource Center, to offer sessions called Breakthrough. Now, these sessions are being offered to the friends, family, and community members whose loved ones or people you care about have been affected by ice use. At the workshop, you'll learn ways to support your loved ones and one another, which is a way to build this healthier, more resilient community that we've been talking about.
So, yeah, there are two sessions you can choose from. The first one is this Wednesday at the Positive Living Center on Commercial Road in South Yarra. It's from 6 to 9 p.m. The second one is later this month on Wednesday, February 22nd at Hares and Hyenas on Johnston Street in Fitzroy, also from 6 to 9 p.m. To book in either of those sessions, visit turningpoint.org.au/education/breakthrough. So, again, that was turningpoint.org.au/education/breakthrough.
And if you want any more information about the Senior Voices Project, about the Speakers Bureau at Living Positive Victoria, or about their Enough Stigma Reduction campaign, you can go to livingpositivevictoria.org.au. Sorry for all the web addresses. But we're thanking you for joining us, and thank you, Theo, for coming in last minute to talk so well about this.
Thanks.
If you have missed any part of tonight's show, or you want to listen to an earlier episode of Well, 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 you can check out our podcast, put together by the wonderful David. Just head to joy.org.au.
joy.org.au/well, well, well. I'll catch you, John.
Thank
no
you,
one
Cal.
Will tell the difference with our two American voices.
Yay.
Anyhow, we the team will be back next Monday night at 8 p.m. on Joy 94.9. A big thank you to you again, Theo. Until then, take care, be well, look after each other. Have a good night.
Bye.
See ya.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.